The Cork Food Stories Podcast with Clara Cooney. A taste of Cork's food producers and suppliers, where every flavour tells a story.
Welcome to this week's episode of Cork Food Stories. I'm Clara Cooney, owner of Clara Cooks and the Gourmet Grocer Deli and Catering Services based in Riverstick in Cork. On this week's episode, I'm talking to Conor Sheehan of Finno Farm based in Mill Street. A farm of three generations, predominantly a dairy farm up until 2018, but also a cattle and sheep farm with Angus beef. And then in 2007, Conor introduced Wagyu into the mix. In 2018, Conor took the brave decision to close the dairy farm and concentrate on the beef and the sheep. I myself was introduced to Conor through an ex-colleague of mine, and now I stock Conor's Wagyu burgers in my shop, which is a huge success. Conor, welcome. Thank you for taking time out today to talk to us.
That's great. I thought it'd be raining because there's loads of work I could be doing at home. But sure, look, it's a great opportunity to talk and be inside in the presence of greatness. You know, it's a great opportunity to be here. Thanks, Clara.
You're more than welcome. Now, I've got to know you and a lot about your business over the last, I suppose, really 6 months. But let's go back, Conor. Let's talk about the beginning. And I suppose really you grew up on a dairy farm. Talk to us a little bit about growing up on the farm and, you know, up to the time that you took over the farm.
We're originally from Mill Street, originally from Ratmore, but my grandfather bought the farm back in the 1930s. He came to visit his sister in Mill Street, and on his way down, he bought our farm. And he had my father and my sister inside in Ballinatona, and as the years went by anyway, the four Sheehans were born. I was the first, so my father had only nine uncles and aunts, and none of them had children. So when I was actually born, they were calling me the link of the generations. So there's quite a lot of history in the farm that we were on. It was called the Baird's Farm. And the Baird himself was a bit of a crazy man. He was given 21 years for bombing the Majesty.
Oh my
God. So there's a history of mad people coming out of my farm. So I think I'm holding the tradition.
It's a little bit of madness there,
yeah,
all right.
It's just a little touch of Ballinatona history, like, you know. But my mother and father were great to us, and we were given every opportunity in life. We were taken to accordion lessons and piano lessons, and we went to all the sports and the fish kyols and everything like that. So we were never shy or never told to be inside in the corner sucking your thumb. Always get out there and don't be afraid of anything, and there's no such thing as impossible. So that's what my wife says. She goes, "Jeannie Mac, you're just bordering on that thing of being over cocky and you're just getting away with it." So we had sheep, beef herd, and a good amount of sheep on the farm because the father really liked the sheep. But as time went by, and there's a lot of fencing in farming and stuff like that, and the laws and rules and regulations that were brought forward by the EU and all that, there was a lot of work to it. And the farm was actually had got very big since my father got married, because he had inherited farms, and my mother then inherited another 100 acres of land in the 90s. So he was very lucky. He got plenty of land, and he had three boys and he had a girl, so everything was grand. So in 1994, I did my year in Rockwell College and I came home farming, and we put up a new milking parlour in 1994-95, because the old milking parlour there was fairly crap. There was an eave chute going out to the bull tank, and the cat used to drink the milk out of the eave chute going into the bull tank. And we used to drink the milk also, like the cat. And we never got sick. And thank God, we were a very fine, healthy family and above average weight and intelligent, I would like to say. Well, that's what my grandfather used to say. And that's when I started, was in 1995. Into a new milking parlour above in Ballinatona, and we went down the road of milking cows, and we were milking about 30 cows at the time. And in 95 or 96 I had 30 cows, and they're all eyed to these great Friesian bulls, and we got TB, and there was five or six of them taken away, and it was a bit of a hit because you're back now to 19 cows.
Yeah,
but we slogged away at it, and the numbers got bigger up to 2018, I had built up the herd to about 350 stock. Oh. And we had about 600 sheep at one stage, but I didn't really like the sheep because they never went the right direction you wanted to, and there was a lot of work involved in them, and plus we didn't have the housing for the sheep, so it was much easier just to put up electric fence for cattle and have that. So we reduced the sheep, concentrated more on the dairy, and we also kept all the beef stock that came off the dairy farm, and the beef heifers that were born, they were put in calves. So there was a kind of a little bit of a suckler herd going on. There was a year and a half, we were selling everything at stores, and we also sold all the lambs on stores, and we're milking our cows. So the I tried to build up the quota by buying the quota, and I bought the quota for 52 cent a litre. And back in 2014, because you had to buy quota and you were getting fined if you produced over your quota, so I was producing milk and getting fined. So the only way to produce more milk and get paid for it was to buy the quota. So when I bought the quota, then after paying big money for it, they abolished it about 3 years later.
Correct.
So the last year they abolished it, I got fined for the milk. I thought it'd come to 25,000 euros worth of fines. So from September to December, I milked the cows for relatively nothing. So that was a kick in the ass. And a lot of farmers will understand that this quota was handy in one way, but when they got rid of it, I think that only every farmer should have only got about 20% extra. So that was fine. We milked away grand. And in 2018, it all came to a crunch because my health gave up. And what I kind of got was a dehydration. It was from not working long hours, and not sleeping properly, and not drinking enough water. And we also had a house fire the same year.
Oh.
So, do you know, I was above inside in the hospital, and I said, you know what, now the first thing now that's going to go are the cows. And I'm going to take a year off now because, geez, this family was gone crazy. I was buying milk powder, 15,000-16,000 euros a year. I had robots for feeding the calves. I was cracking matches at thousands. And you think that if you're spending all this money that you're actually making it.
Mm.
But I found I was a busy fool and I was working so hard for a life that I probably never have. It was a life that I wanted. No, not every fellow wants to have the life that I want.
Mm.
Some fellows have their own little thing they want to do. But I wanted to go to matches and I wanted to do it herself.
Bit of a balance. Like, yeah,
herself give up to me now because I'm going so busy now again that I hardly go to the matches. So if she's listening to this now, you're right. Yeah, I'm still taking on a little bit more. But that's the way I'm built. That's the way we all are. My brother.
But it's different. I think your work-life balance has changed.
Oh, does farmers kind of, they get so involved in their farm and they don't realise that there's actually life outside it. I always knew there was a life outside it, but as I was getting older, I wouldn't be able to do all the things that I wanted to do and have the farm. Plus, it's very hard to get people to help you on the farm.
Yeah.
They're not there. And the fellas that were helping me, they actually inherited their own farms and they get more engrossed into it. And on a farm, every fella doesn't want a fella all the time. He wants them for maybe a couple of hours in a day or one or 2 days a week.
Yeah.
They're not there no more.
Yeah.
And it is like this. My father was getting old.
Yeah.
My young lads are too small. They couldn't be standing down the road and 40 or 50 bullocks running down the road over them. They could be squashed below there. And the tractors were getting bigger and faster and everything. And I goes, genie, Mac, I had a 100 horsepower tractor. Then I had a 130 horsepower tractor. Then I went to 100. I goes, where does it stop?
Yeah.
So I got rid of the cows. Cancelled all my direct debits and in 2018 and whoever was important enough to ring back whatever I cancelled, I'd sort them because I just found that it was just going out of hand.
Like I know you said you took a year off there in 2018, but you still had the cattle, didn't you?
Oh, so
you just kind of didn't grow it, didn't do anything, but you were still though progressively because you got the Wagyu back in 2007, wasn't it?
Yeah, in 2007 that was actually just a bit.
Tell us a little bit about it though, because to go down that route of going, okay, you know, not everyone will know about Wagyu, by the way, but you know it's a premium beef. It's traditionally from Japan.
Yeah.
And I think to bring it into Irish farming is a little chancy in one way. So, you know, it's people kind of making a decision on how to do it. So it's been a success now, but this was 2007 when you started. So talk us through kind of your whole mindset on that and how you came about making that decision to bring them on anyway.
I just Googled the most expensive beef in the world. And Ireland, we knew at the time, was the wealthiest country in Ireland. And I rang a few farmers in England and Wales and they said, "Gee, mate, you have no bother selling Wagyu because Ireland is loaded. You've got helicopters. Sure, of course you're going to be. Wagyu was crazy expensive." So I sent away for embryos and I got embryos and we put them into purebred Angus.
So where did you get them from?
Germany.
From Germany, okay. Yeah. And were they expensive now to get the embryos?
They were, yeah. I loaded my credit card with money that I was supposed to pay my contractor. And I rang some dude in Germany, and he was fine. And I sent him a big load of money. And I got the embryos, and they were given to an EI station above in County Cavan. And we prepared the Angus heifers for the embryos.
Okay.
So they came down and they did their job. So out of my massive investment, I thought I'd have 8 or 9 Wagyus. All I got was 1 heifer and 2 bulls. Well, out of it. So people think that it's very easy to get into, and a lot of people that are involved in embryo transfers and all that. It's like going to the day in the races. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Chancing your luck.
When the animals were born on the farm, there was 3 vits came up from Mill Street to see this animal. And he was the puniest, horriblest creature that was born. And my father said, Jesus Christ, he says, what have you brought into the yard? He was a small, this heifer was huge and this thing was tiny. But the 3 vits came up, they were brilliant, and they all came up to see him, and there was 2 of them around the same time, and I had to wait for 2 years for them to actually develop into something.
Yeah.
So I could start breeding them off of one of the heifers that I had. So I had 2 bulls and a Wagyu heifer.
Yeah.
To find 2 years down the line that one of the bulls never dropped his balls. Every kind of quack was telling me to rub this onto his package and all this kind of stuff and minerals and everything. But eventually, anyway, after a good number of years, he ended up at my in my barbecue, my 40th birthday party. Yeah, and he was probably one of the first Wagyus that was ever slaughtered on the farm. Probably, I'm open to criticism on that, but there was quite a lot of meat in it, and we had quite a lot of people called for my son's birthday, my mother's birthday, all in September, and we had a big bash in September. Plenty Heineken and plenty Wagyu was had. But the other guy, if you were tying your shoelace inside in the yard, he would be over. He was the most fertile creature that we ever saw. Every one of my neighbours actually got a Wagyu calf. And when they did, I actually bought the calf off them again because they didn't want them. And so I was fine. So I was slowly building up my Wagyu herd, even though they were half-breds.
Yeah.
The Holstein crossed with a Wagyu is actually a fantastic cross, because the Holstein cow is not known for its meat production. Mm. It's predominantly its milk production.
Okay.
But it has fantastic marbling and also brings great size. When I was milking, I crossed him in with my Holstein heifers. That bull was doing his job and he was tipping away. So yep. I had a lot of bullocks off him and I had heifers off him, and they were giants. But the thing about the Wagyu is I couldn't sell them anywhere. So I had these animals running around the place, and they were continuously eating. I couldn't take them to mart because nobody knew what they were.
Yeah.
And they were horrible, ugly looking things. They were, the Wagyu animal is actually predominantly was used for ploughing fields in Japan.
Wow.
So he had big shoulders and a narrow ass. And the Americans went to Japan a long time ago, and they had discovered this fantastic meat, and it was beautiful, and they thought it was down to the massaging and the sake that they were given. So what the Japanese guys used to be doing were, they were making a sake. This is my own idea now. If I was in Ireland a long time ago, that you were making your sake there, and you had the byproduct from the sake, and you'd give it to the cattle. So the cattle were drunk out the back and the boys are drunk in the front. And I suppose they were massaging the animals because they're all having a great time. So the meat was known for its delicacy. The Americans, of course, brought it out of Japan. But the Japanese got kind of wind of this, and they kept the best genetics for themselves. So the north of Japan, it's called the Kobe Islands, where they would produce Kobe Wagyu. It's like certain parts of the world have fantastic wine.
Yeah.
It can be made somewhere else, but you can't call it.
Yeah, yeah.
Some place in France, yeah. Chardonnay wine or something, or cheese from Italy or something.
Like the Champagne region. You know, Champagne is Champagne. Yeah, yeah.
But they have their own thing. So they can command fantastic prices. This is a delicacy in Japan. So I said, right, I won't feed them sake because I can't give them sake. And I can't go down the route that the Japanese do. They kind of confine them a lot to a house, and they feed them a high energy and protein feed for nearly 4 years.
They're indoors, aren't they?
In Japan.
In Japan. They're not, their majority of the time, they're not left room. So they've quite a harsh enough life, don't they? I feel anyway.
I suppose. Look, for what I see on the YouTube, they have their farms and their animal welfare is fantastic there. They've got their straw and everything like that. But my boys tend to run around 600 acres of a commonage that I have. And because when you have to have animals for such a long length of time, you tend to try and put them away to a different area so they can grow away naturally themselves. Because I'm in Ireland, I'm not in New York, or I'm not in London, and I can't command the price that these guys are actually getting. Yeah. The years went on, and I just always had these guys in the background. I never did anything much with them. I just liked the thought that someday that I would have the most expensive beef in the world here in Ireland. And I got a phone call from Noel Clancy in Tipperary to do a Twitter account, Ireland's Farmers.
Yeah.
And I did it for the week and I had great crack. I was telling everybody what I was doing and I grew this beard in the middle of it. Well, not in a week. No, I had this beard growing and I was getting on. I was enjoying the whole social aspect of things because that's one thing I always liked was the social aspect of anything. Whereas the milking cows was confining me to Ballinatona.
Yeah.
I'd be there in the morning, I'd be there in the evening. And when you were away, you were always thinking about them. And you'd always be, if you're waiting, you get a phone call that this button won't work, or there's no milk for that, or I've put the milk into the bulk tank, and you're always on. There's always, your phone call is like the Batman's phone. You're always waiting for it to ring. So that's a thing that fellas never count. The dairy enterprise is the dairy farm will pay all its bills, but it will never pay you. I think it doesn't pay any. I might be wrong, and some fellas might say, "Oh, just because you were a bad milk
for you,
but for me,
for you, it wasn't the case.
Yeah. So that's it. We set up. We were thinking about a name for Finno Farm, and Lavinia reckons that she came up with the name. I tell Lavinia that I came up with the name.
Lavinia, we all know it was you.
So the river Finno runs down beside our farm, and at the top of it is Cum na Tuaisce Lake. And a Cum na Tuaisce waterfall. So the river itself runs down through the farm and joins up inside Mill Street in the Blackwater. The river Finno actually used to turn the mill.
Finno, it's pronounced, is it? Because I've been calling it Finno Farm.
Finno is gold water. Golden water.
And
The water comes from the bog. So when the water flew down to the bog, obviously there was a colour of gold in it. I might go penning it sometime. They might be wrong. There might actually be gold in it. So
that must be beautiful there with the waterfall and the surroundings on the farm.
Yes, that's something that I'd like to be able to add to the farm
eventually,
itself.
Yeah.
We're actually very lucky. When my grandfather came to Mill Street to see his sister, she had married into Mill Street, into this beautiful farm above in Curra. And they had no children, so my father got the farm. And you don't actually take any notice of the beauty of your area until you start coming into age of life.
Because it's very true.
You discover you want to know more about the history of your family, the history of the area, and you want to do your own thing to preserve it and probably leave a mark in it that this is what Conor Sheehan did in the 2020.
Amazing,
do you know? So up there, there's 12 acres of forestry, and what we're actually doing at the moment is we've got the planning permission, but the forestry service at the moment isn't a bit of a, everybody's blaming COVID for work not being done and applications being filed for and all this kind of stuff. So what I'd like to have on the farm is a walkway and a few tables and chairs to listen to the water that I never listened to for the last 40 years. But now, when I do go up there, I listen because, man, this is heaven. So I want to preserve it and I want to put in natural trees into it.
Beautiful.
And I want to pop in a truffle farm into it, and I've had to get the soils sampled because the plants are very expensive, and I have this.
Yeah, is it from France you got them, or where's the...
France.
Do you have to send your soil away to France to be tested on the type of truffle trees? Is it something like that? Am I wrong in that?
It's the pH. You've got to have the soil a certain pH.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky because the truffle attaches themselves to hazel trees, which grow naturally on the farm in Inna.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's kind of funny in one way because you have to keep the deer out to let the trees grow. But if you have truffles in the trees, till the deer come, eat the truffles and crap around the place and drop the mycelium, which is the type of truffle. So actually, the deers help spread the truffle, but you can't let them in because all the forestries are cut in Ireland years ago and all these massive forestries had truffles in them. There's truffles in Longford. That's why the English never went up there, but they couldn't be bothered going to Longford. So who'd want to go to Longford like? So there's truffles in Longford, lads, if you want them. So, but I'm not telling you where my truffles are going to be anyway, because there's a few lads around. They've been asking about it. But
this is another, we'll talk a little bit about kind of the Wagyu length and, you know, bringing it out to market. But this is another lengthy process because I know you're starting the truffles now. How long did they take? 5-6 years before you can start?
Every tree costs €35 plus delivery from France.
Yeah.
They can't be near any other trees because other trees can contaminate them. So I'm very lucky like that because where they are going to be put now, there is a river on both sides of them. So they're actually going to be landlocked. So they're going to have their own thing. I've taken down the lime there myself. I got a soil sampled in my local Dairy Gold and it's only needs a small sprinkle of it. So before I do plant the trees, I have the lime put in there. I have the soil sent away before I put the lime there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, there in September. It's gone too late now to plant it, but I'm going to go for September. Any month with an iron that you can plant. So I think I have enough on at the moment. So I think September now is going to be when I'm going to be planting my first 25 trees. And if I do 25 trees every year.
Yeah.
Because every 25 trees is €1,000.
Yeah.
Do you know? So I reckon that's enough. You can plant about 500 trees an acre. There's about 4 acres there.
Yeah.
So.
But how long do, the trees will take? How long?
Well, after 5 years.
It's another 5 years. Yeah,
five years to 7 years.
So you can't touch. Really, you're going to get nothing, except the beauty of it all and, you know, creating the most amazing forest area. But from a revenue perspective, you're not going to be getting anything in. At least for 5 years.
Honestly, I don't mind.
Yeah.
If these trees grow naturally there, they were naturally there.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The place where I'm planting it, I think the guys in Geneves are going to kill me because it is on the side of a mountain. And this is actually the only flattest part of the area where the boys long ago used to play football. So all the old boys across the way say, oh, geez, we used to go down there to your farm and kick ball in that piece of ground there. And I go, well, it's like this, lads. I don't think there's anybody around here anymore to kick ball in this little place. Because this is all landlocked and everybody's gone. There was 13 or 14 families up in this place and they're all gone now. So, well, I'm after heading to die. I have 2 boys and a girl, so they might still be up and around there making noise. So.
But that would be amazing if you're going to open it up to the public. Like, it's a nice forestry walk and even to be able to go. Because right now you can go to the farm, can't you? And you can. Do you do tours on the farm?
No, but I got a phone call from Discover Ireland and there's a bunch of Canadians coming down to see my Wagyu operation.
Oh, amazing.
I don't think they're coming down for my expertise. I think they're coming down for just the crack of it.
Oh, definitely. Share stories. And if anybody has TikTok, by the way, you need to follow Connor's TikTok page because there's some great crack and great stories on there altogether.
Yeah, well, the guy who helped me design the Finnoe Farm, he gives out to me because I'm selling a premium product, but I'm not acting very premium. you've got to still understand I'm only the farmer that makes them and I can't be anything else except a farmer.
Yeah.
So everything that we have, that we eat, comes from a farmer. No matter what you think, and we are told what to do by everybody and we try our best to do it. And sometimes now that we're told that we can't spray and we can't do this. And for the last 20 years, we were told to spray everything. And now we're told we can't spray. And we've done all these courses for spraying. And now we're told that we can't spray. So I think the farming has gone a bit out of bounds. It's gone too stressful. The amount of bookwork that's given to farmers at the moment. I hate bookwork because that's why I'm a farmer.
Yeah.
And most farmers, if they do a mistake in their bookwork, they will get fined 20% of their payment. Like, I don't know any other job that's going to get fined 20% if they do a mistake.
Yeah.
But in farming, you will be penalised. You know, they'll make an example of you. So I've gone down the organics route on the farm.
Yeah.
We have probably been organic since 2018.
Yeah.
We have never used a lot of fertiliser on the farm for the simple reason. There's a quite a large farm there. And, you know, I was building it away all the time. Just like a little savings account and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'd like to think now that I'd be farming like an old man. There's no more salesmen coming into my farm.
Yeah.
Because I'm no good anymore to them. I want to be able to produce what I can on the farm and keep, because like I know myself, last winter I kept too much cattle, and this winter was a very long winter. It was six months. Mm. And it's very hard to get organic feed as well. And that's a big issue as well, because everything's coming from England.
Yeah.
Organic feed comes from England at a monstrous price. So yeah. That's why we have planted 15 acres of our own barley this year. Organic, we were thinking, could we spray it and nobody would see it? No, I said, no, we can't spray it. We've got to do this the way that was done before. So we plowed it. And there was neighbours calling up and they goes, Jesus, look at the state of the place. They never sprayed it. And then we got this seed in from England, and we just 12 stone. And I says, why is this 12 stone? Because the crows are going to come and eat it all. And they're only going to eat a certain amount, because when you're in organics, you've got to add extra seed because there's nothing there to protect it anymore.
Yeah.
So he goes, oh, geez, where does the... So, but the Department of Agriculture have given a grant aiding fellas to plant barley, because since the war in the Ukraine, they're saying, lads, we've got to be a little bit more efficient.
Yeah.
And self-sustainable. So, look, I know everything is calming down in the war and stuff like that. So I'll have my own barley. I hope
this is amazing, though. I mean, you're pretty much going to be able to do everything.
Yeah, I hope to have finish. It myself. Yeah, we've an orchard gone in, actually, my own beer as well at home, and
self-sufficient business.
I'd like to think that I'd be the first organic farmer for the Wagyu in Ireland.
Amazing.
Finnow Farm is tipping away, but the farm itself is holding all the cattle, and I've got 15 years of cattle held on my farm.
Yeah.
So I'm at a stage now that I'd like someone to come on board and help me.
Mm.
Because while you think that I'm doing all these videos, that I'm flying, the day you will see me doing any more videos, you know, I am doing very well.
Yeah.
So when you see me advertising, I'm looking for people to try my Wagyu for special occasions, for communions, for 50th birthday parties. You'd actually be supporting local. You can actually sit down and know where your meat is coming from. You know the farmer where your meat is coming from. And of course, there's always going to be a great deal when you call to me and ring me up and say, hey, Conor, I have 21st coming on there. I have 30 med lads coming in. They probably won't be interested in Wagyu, but sure, do you know, we'll have the nice Wagyu anyway. She's my only daughter. She has the best. You know? And my meat, people ring me up. Is it gluten-free? I said, there's never any gluten in it.
There's nothing.
Never was.
Exactly.
And it's only what is added. And it's frozen. He goes, oh, we prefer it fresh. I goes, it's like this. I goes,
it won't last.
It won't last because this is what meat is. And the amount of pressure that meat suppliers are put into to deliver a fresh amount of meat every day, it's a massive strain, because I deliver meat now as well.
Yeah.
And some people will... the amount of work that's involved in delivering fresh meat every day is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the rules and regulations that restaurant owners and hotel owners are put under if they were allowed to store their meat frozen. Because I think I eat frozen meat all the time. Nothing, just leave a thaw out.
Yeah.
But people are expecting an awful lot from food, and the people are involved and trying to bring the best of food. They should look at things a little bit more. Instead of ordering 5 burgers every day in a restaurant, they should nearly order 80 or 90 and freeze them.
Well, actually, like, you know, they're frozen in my shop, but they don't last long in the shop. People know now that I have it. And I just explain to people the exact same thing. Just they say, how do I cook that now? I said, take them out in the morning, let them thaw out and cook them like you'd normally cook your burger, you know. And, you know, I think that's it. It's just making people understand that you're not going to a butcher's stall to get your fresh burgers for that evening. You're getting them with no preservatives. No, you know, there's nothing added in it. So it's going to be, of course, in the freezer. I couldn't have that much burgers in the fridge in my shop, because I'd be throwing them out and be a waste, you know.
Yeah.
So, but they keep coming back on her. So that's a good sign, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll be having a bit of a laugh and things like that, because people are understanding that food is expensive.
Yeah.
It's. I don't think it should be a commodity. It's a necessity. And you don't have to have it morning, noon and night.
Yeah.
A balanced diet. I know we're all prone to calling to local pizzas and kebabs and all that because we're kind of get lazy and we treat ourselves with crap food. And if we have a great week, it goes, oh, let's go to the piss. If we treated ourselves with good food,
yeah,
probably that might be a lot of people's, and because plus as well, I'd have a little positive story behind it. And I'd hope that a person, when they'd call up, that they'd be feeling good.
Yeah.
But when they'd be leaving the farm, that they're, what is, and they bring up the children, I show them the calves.
Yeah.
And I made them catch a calf the other day, and a customer called up the house now, and they went down to caught a calf. And sure, I couldn't be saying that this guy now is going to be burgers in 3 years' time, but this is the way it goes. So that's about it. My Wagyu is 4 years old.
Yeah, because you started in 2007. And then you only went to market. When did you go to market?
A year and a half ago.
So
yeah.
It's been a long process, hasn't it?
It's been a long process because 'tis like a person that has pet cats. They don't realise how many cats they have until somebody comes in and tell them, Jeannie Mac, you've got too many cats entirely. And that was the wife. She goes, what are all the, oh, don't mind those, no. She goes, you've cattle everywhere. I goes, don't mind them, no, they're fine. She goes, all right, that's great. Sure, you're farming. I know about it. But it was slowly getting into me that I should start doing something with it.
Yeah.
So the Wagyu I have, they are 4 years old. It's very hard to get animals like that because it takes them 28 months for them to develop this marbling.
Wow.
And these guys are huge now. So I have to have a field and they come into the barn because when I was feeding them outside the field, when they'd see me pass up the road, they used to jump over the ditches up the road after me like racehorses. So I have to confine these boys to some bit. So they come in the field, they come down to me. Because if I was driving along the road, they'd be licking the boot of my car a mile up the road after me with their tongues out. So these guys are massive. They're around a long time. And Aberdeen Angus used to be having gone in 2 years' time.
Yeah.
So that's where the cost comes into the Wagyu. The amount of feed that they have in the 2 years, the length of time that
they
have.
The type of feed that they have.
The type of feed that they have. They have to get a high protein and a high energy feed together.
So you feed them in the barn and then you let them just chill out in the pastures, don't you?
Well, he walks up and he lies out above and he looks on over the whole farm.
Full yeah. to the brim.
That's the way they'd yeah. be like snails, I tell you. They'd be like snails. My next door neighbour has, they're called Brave Herders. They do Dexter cattle.
Oh yeah, lovely.
They're half the size
wow.
of these things. And Jerry Reardon and Dermot and Connor next door, we have a great laugh because... our animals are getting being slaughtered here in a local butcher's here above here in Ballincollig called the Crowley's, and when my animal is going, our local contractor picks him up, Daniel Dinahy, loads up, and Jerry Reardon, when my animal stood over in Jerry Reardon's yard, the Wagyu, the rest of them, they all stopped eating the cattle. They goes, what in the name of God is that thing? It was huge. Jerry was laughing, and the three Dexters, Jerry said, was nearly the same weight as the one animal.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so they've got. So we like to call ourselves the Beef Barons of Ballinatona. We've got Wagyu, the Japanese Wagyu, and we've got the local Irish bred native Dexter.
Yeah,
all down the one road.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the way we like it. Nice, easy old farming. Jerry's doing the same and they're doing the same. Nice, easy going farm. No stress. If an animal breaks in, we don't mind. Do you know, it's...
Yeah.
There, I can't do
you look
today.
After each other.
I can't do it today, Jerry, tomorrow. Oh, it's all right. As long as you know he's there, he's fine. I think that's what a lot of farmers need.
Yeah.
Because I always remembered that farming was a lot less stressful. But no. Man, I'd like to think that I'd be laid back, but... Jeannie Mac.
But I think, Conor, your business is only starting, really, to be honest. And I think that's why you're probably so busy right now, because you even tell me about, like, you know, you're getting out there, you're breaking through the market, really. A market that for Wagyu that hasn't been big in Ireland, let's be fair, you know. And but you're getting there slowly.
Well, as I said, I'm just doing my little videos, and you go out on a Saturday night and there's, hey, how's it going, Conor? Oh, yeah, I love your videos. Oh, yes, I buy some burgers off of there next week and I'd be going home feeling like a millionaire, and I'd be Monday morning and crickets. No sales.
Yeah, so you're selling directly so people can actually go onto your website and buy directly. And you do the box, isn't it?
Yeah,
the,
there's two boxes there. There's the steak box and there's the burger box.
Yeah.
And they're both delivered frozen inside a refrigerated box to your door. Next day delivery.
Next day delivery. And you're doing wholesale. So to the likes of myself, I know Farmsy and Bandon are doing yours as well. And talk to us a little about restaurant trade.
Restaurant trade for myself is kind of hard because I was still working on the farm at home, and they would like to get their meat every day.
Yeah.
That's not easy.
Yeah.
That means I have to go in and invest in a van and all this kind of stuff. There's not that kind of money made yet in it. I'm only out of the year, and I don't want to be buying something else for Fino Farm. Fino Farm, like every other company, must be able to pay for itself.
Yeah.
If I do okay, I'll get it. And if I don't, I'll just shut it down and say, well, I tried. And that's all I can do. Because people think that this is easy to set up a business. I never knew what it was like to set up a business, because I was given a business.
Yeah.
I was given a farm. The party was already created.
Yeah.
All I had to do was just keep it going. But when you decide to go in and start your own party, there's nobody going to tell you what to do, where to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And I will tell you one thing. The people that had given me this opportunity were the Crowleys of Ballincollig. I drove up to Ballyburden and I had asked for the two main men of Ballyburden and Christora Crowley, and I found where they're having the dinner. And I drove into the Ovens bar where the two boys are having their dinner blood, and I pulled up a seat and the two boys are going, who in the name of God is this guy? And I introduced myself and I told him who I was and I told him what I wanted to do. And I don't mind anyway, but Francis and Christor said, sure, have you got an animal ready? And I goes, I have. That was my first Twitter going down the road. The excitement of some fella. There was nobody else there to do it. They said, right, we'll give you a shot. And a year and a half now, I'm delivering meat for them. I would consider them great, great friends. I'd consider them friends now, because they're a family-run business.
Yeah.
Do you know, that means an awful lot. And the people of Ballincollig should be so proud and so lucky of the people that they have inside in Ballincollig. Yeah. Because they're there for a long time, do you know. And Christor is a bit of a scut, and Michal is a bit of a scut as well, do you know. And I think that's why we get on, because, do you know, we're all scuts together. Do you know? And I've learned an awful lot about the meat itself, the different types of cuts and stuff like that. So I hope to be able to go down the line that what I have at the moment are only steak, the prime cuts, which would be steak, or would be fillet, sirloin and strip line. There are other cuts in the animal as well that I'd like to be able to do, but that takes a lot of time, and I have to separate all the different types of meats inside in the shop and or inside in the fridge and all that. And there's a lot of work on the website as well, and that takes a lot of time as well. So I try to keep it simple to steak and burgers. But I'm on the lookout for a butcher that would give me a hand.
This is a job ad as well, by the way. So anyone out there
looking for a butcher,
a good butcher.
That would take a half of one and see how he gets on and break it down into the different cuts that other people want. I got a lovely compliment the other day from a well-renowned hotel in Dublin. Said my Wagyu was the best in the country.
That's lovely.
Head chef, they're actually going to come down to see the meat. And the reason, he said to me, why is your meat so different to everybody else? I says, well, because mine is 4 years old. You'll very rarely find animals of this age and this the amount that I have on a farm anywhere in the country. And if you have any for sale, you can ring me on 087-225-7054. Yeah, so
you'll be getting all types of calls now in the middle of the night, Conor.
Anyway, Jeannie Mac, I get drunk women ringing me at 10 o'clock at night after eating my steaks, thinking that the steaks are the best I've ever had. And poker men, fellas having poker parties and getting good steak for themselves, inviting over friends and having cook it on the new barbecue that they bought and all that. And barbecuing has gone very popular, and there's a lot of people into barbecuing.
Oh, I love it, yeah.
Is it steaming it or something? And these egg boilers or these egg things?
Webers, you mean?
Yeah. Webers and Tagers and...
Yeah.
Yeah, and the pavilion above in Cork City as well, where actually they had my Wagyu burgers there to start the year. It was great. Yeah.
You were telling me that.
That was great. I'm above there now. I used to go up there and I was delivering away my meat and everything there. It was great to walk in there, and I'd say hello to a few customers up there and say, hello, I'm Conor now. That's my Wagyu, you know, that you're eating. They'd be they'd be delighted, because, you know, people never actually think that this meat comes from a farmer.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big history behind all our food. People just take it for granted that it just arrives on the plate.
Yeah.
I never realised that by the time the animal leaves my farm, by the time it ends up in a plate in a restaurant or at the dinner table, the amount of people that's actually involved from, I didn't realise it because I was living in a little bubble in Fino Farm or Ballinatona.
Yeah.
Nothing else existed outside milking cows. And that's what I realise now, that people that are starting off their own business, it's not easy. You've got no one else to. You can't rely on your friends, your neighbours, because if you have to do that, sure, there's nothing in that. You have to go beyond all those. Fine, you'll get your neighbours and come up. But when you're selling a lot of it, you've got to look beyond the small area. You have to be a big fish now. You can't be a small fish. You've got to be looking for new markets all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't count your fishes you can't count your chickens before they've hatched, isn't it?
That's it, yeah.
Do you know? So sometimes I'd be getting great stories that, yes, I'm a restaurant now and I'll be on to, and I never hear from them again. And you get ups and downs, but do you know?
Also, as you said, you're like, it's kind of like you're a one-man show really at the moment. As such, I know you've the help of the family, but sure, your kids are young and, you know, your wife is helping you probably more with the mental side of things more than anything else.
She's very good with the answering the emails.
Just fab, doing the admin and everything.
And I have a young fellow now, Calvin, he's doing he's Fino Farm Junior. So he's doing the real modern TikToks with the cap cut and all that.
Oh, that's brilliant. Cap cut, I know.
Cap cut, and then goes, woohoo.
So he's the next line down, yeah. What age is Calvin now?
Calvin is 10, and I have Keithan is a 6'13" and he's very good with cattle. He was with me all day Saturday now, sorting out our Wagyu heifers that are going to go on calf. And Adelina then, she's deft as a basket, fierce into art and her design and her clothes and all this kind of stuff. So I think that was me. And back in my day, I was fierce and I was
creative.
I was a male model for Cecilia on my knee back in the day. She was always a give out to me that I was never put cream in my face because it was always weather bashed. So Cecilia Holman Lee gave me a couple of weeks of being a male model of some crack. That's diversification.
See, there
for you
go.
Huh?
You'd put your hand at anything, Connor, you would. The Angus, like, are you selling the Angus beef away as well? Or are you just doing Wagyu now?
I could start doing that.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to prove to myself that I get Wagyu up to such a standard that when you do go online that you can also get, not necessarily an Angus, but a Shorthorn. Because every breed that's out there has its own distinctive taste. Where they come from, the grass that they're fed, the environment that they come from. It's like the milk in Ireland. Milk in Kerry is a different kind of grass because the grass is sandier over there compared to West Cork or the North Cork, which, you know. You have different grains, different millers. And then it goes to the factory and it's all mixed up together and everything tastes the same. But when you can pick and choose like your different cheeses, you get your taste back and you go, Jesus, this is lovely. Because we're all eating processed stuff and everything tastes the same. It is all salt. I recommend to put no salt in my burger because the taste that's in the meat, and I always say, those rubs that they've been talking about now, rub this onto that meat. I go, Jeannie Mac, those rubs were invented to hide the taste of horrible meat. Meat has its own taste. All different foods have their own taste and there should be no need of rubbing spices them, maybe.
Certain ones,
certain things like. But you're. I think I never try to know because I don't do much cooking. If I'm all out to cook the Wagyu burgers at home, the barbecue, and that's it. If you want to add your cheese to it or your tomato ketchup to get away after that. But I just think that if you do try local meats or local people that are doing their own thing, you will definitely. I know you're going to pay a little bit extra,
but it's the same as well with them. Your vegetables and everything, you know, I had Jason from Valley View Farm. He does the vegetables and, again, the taste is superior to anything that you'll get in the supermarkets.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a couple of months of the year, the carrot season is gone and stuff. And, it's, you know, for him, and it's hard to get anything that tastes anything like it, you know, for people and businesses and.
Yeah, I think there should be an incentive for people I tried it myself, that I didn't try, but my ground was just too stony, that I'd have a garden for fellas to come up. But people's life are so busy, they don't have time to go do a bit of gardening or anything. Oh, we've got into the bees now, and we've got this new bees now and everything, and I'd like to try the honey and all this kind of stuff. And I got onto the Bee Society that, if there's people inside the town that they'd love to have a beehive, but they can't have it inside in the housing estate, that they could come up and have their own beehive above my farm.
Yeah.
And call up and have their own beehive above there. I'd just like to get people involved.
Look, that's amazing. I think that you have come a very long way, Conor, and there's a lot more happening coming up now for you between truffles, bees, forestry walks, and then just promoting the Wagyu. It's a fantastic story. So I think for everybody, really, it's, you know, follow Conor. You're on TikTok a lot. And then, of course, you're on Instagram, aren't you? You're on Instagram
as well?
Yeah,
try them all, yeah.
And then his website, where you can go onto the website and book in a way and, you know, look at book getting your Wagyu and stuff. And hopefully one day there'll be truffles on the menu. But it's been a lot for you, I think, as well. There's been quite a number of challenges for you throughout the whole lot, getting to where you are now.
I know, I just can't take things too serious, just like anything. If you take it too serious, it's that meant, I don't know, it just should come with you. Just work away yourself. That's the way family should be. Just tip away and hide a checkbook. That's the only way you'll have a stress-free life, is hide that goddamn checkbook.
And you still have sheep, though, and everything on the farm as well.
Yeah, yeah, we've Lamborghers as well on Finno Farm as well, just seasonal thing, like, so.
I'd say keeping that in the family.
I have the sheep now, keeping the archer down now, so they're inside there now, so.
They all have their purpose.
And I don't have to be chasing them, because they're well worded in.
So look, I think for everybody listening, it's thank you so much for taking time out, because as you say yourself, you're going back to having a very busy life again and trying to get your name out there, which is starting for sure. You know, if anybody wants to get on to buy a box of the steaks or the burgers, get onto his website.
Yeah.
If you want to just try out a few burgers, pop down to my store in Riverstick. They're absolutely gorgeous. Do you know, actually, one of the things that people always say to me, you know, the way a lot of burgers, they shrink once you put them into the pan. These burgers don't shrink. So they're six-ounce steak burgers.
Yeah, and you don't use any vegetable oil.
No.
You're just cooking its own fat.
Absolutely stunning,
Take your time, we're eating it. Don't swallow it, just take your time.
Enjoy it, exactly.
Well, enough.
And it is, it definitely is. But a lovely story, Conor. I have to take my hat off to you, because it's not an easy thing to change it up, you know, from old school farming to where you're going and the route you're going down. But I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that you're going to make a huge success of it all.
Well, thanks very much.
So you'll keep us all entertained with your fabulous stories anyway. And the bit of the gas crack that goes along with it as well. So thanks a million. Thanks everybody for tuning in today. Any last words, Conor, that you want to...
All these... you can edit this, can't you? Because it's taken a while to think about it. All the problems we have are mostly all self-inflicted. And all the stresses are mostly all self-inflicted also. So if you just calm down a small bit and see what's around you, you'll find that life. You don't have to have the new car, or you don't have to have the new mobile phone or anything like that. But if you do, you have to. But just choose your priorities in life and you'll find it is very simple.
I like that. I like that a lot. Conor, thanks a million. Absolute pleasure. I hope everybody's enjoyed the episode this week. Please share. It helps the podcast grow. Thanks to Red FM for producing the podcast for us. It's absolutely fantastic. Listen out for our next episode, which will be out in a couple of weeks. Thanks again, Conor.